Imagine a world where you are completely 100% severed from the traditional power grid. Like you are totally cut off from the internet. You have zero connection to centralized cloud servers like AWS or Google. And yet somehow you still have full access to enterprise-grade AI. You have perfectly secure communications. And, you know, your entire local infrastructure is just running autonomously.
It's kind of hard to wrap your head around at first.
It really is. But welcome to the Deep Dive. Today is Sunday, April 5th, 2026, and we are unpacking this massive stack of technical white papers, business performas, and architectural blueprints from an industrial conglomerate called DReticular.
Yeah, and they are really operating right at the bleeding edge of the decentralized physical infrastructure market, or DPNIN, as it's called.
Right, which is projected to hit, what, $3.5 trillion by
Yeah,
2028?
exactly. 3.5 trillion.
Which is just staggering. So our mission today for you, the listener, is to figure out how DReticular is taking this upcycled hardware and turning it into an ecosystem they call spherical resilience.
Which is a great term.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this because that concept of spherical resilience is just such a brilliant way to visualize the shift we're seeing in tech right now.
Definitely.
Because if you look at traditional infrastructure, right, it's built like a spider web, it's highly connected, it spans the entire globe, but it is incredibly fragile. I mean, if a backhoe cuts a main fiber optic line or a central server farm goes down,
The whole web just collapses.
exactly, millions of people lose service instantly. But spherical resilience, it sort of replaces that fragile web with a swarm of self-sufficient armored bubbles.
Right. So if one bubble gets knocked out by, say, a storm or a cyber attack, the rest just keep floating. They're completely unbothered.
It's a radical departure from everything we've built over the last, what, 20 years?
Oh, easily. I mean, the sources actually refer to this paradigm shift as the death of the line.
The death of the line, I love that.
Yeah, the idea is basically that relying on long physical and digital tethers, miles of power lines or centralized data centers,
Yeah.
it's just a massive security and operational liability now.
Right.
But to actually build one of those self-sufficient bubbles, you have to start with the physical hardware. Like you have to
Yeah.
figure out how a computer literally survives out in the middle of nowhere.
Which is no small feat.
Right. So DReticular engineered what they call the Rural Infrastructure Operating System, or RIOS. And the entire core philosophy of RIOS is island mode.
Meaning it operates with absolutely zero internet access. All the data is processed locally at the edge, and the machine only talks to the outside world when it actively chooses to, right?
Exactly. And pulling that off requires some pretty intense engineering across three different tiers of hardware. So, tier one is the Nomad series.
Right, okay.
These are highly mobile edge devices designed for really harsh environments. Think like a solar rig out in the desert or maybe a moving transport vehicle.
Right.
And what's really compelling here is how they upcycle commodity hardware. So they'll take an industrial cellular bridge, but before deploying it, they perform this kind of surgical modification on it.
Yeah, I read this part. They physically rip out the lithium-ion battery.
Exactly. They rip it out and replace it with a battery elimination circuit.
Well, yeah, because a bomb in a box is just a terrible design choice.
Seriously.
Like, if you leave a standard lithium battery baking inside a metal enclosure in the Mojave Desert, it doesn't just fail.
Yeah.
It swells up into what engineers call a puffy battery.
And then burst into flames.
Right. So by removing the battery entirely and wiring the device directly to, like, a 12 or 48 volt external solar array, they completely eliminate the fire hazard but keep the unit online.
Yeah, and they apply that exact same paranoid survival logic to the brains of the Tier 1 units too, the telemetry core.
Okay, that's that.
It's basically built around an armored Raspberry Pi 5, but they actually solder this tiny Panasonic ML2020 real-time clock battery straight to the motherboard.
Wait, like a little watch battery?
Yeah, literally a watch battery.
Yeah.
Because think about it, if you are operating in island mode with no internet, you can't ping a global time server to know what time it is.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
Right. And without accurate time, all your cryptographic logs and security certificates just instantly fail. So that tiny battery ensures the system's internal clock survives even if the primary power goes down for months.
That's incredibly smart. Which that brings us to tier two, right? The Sentry and Pilot standard series.
Yes, the stationary backbones of this network.
And there's a fascinating supply chain pivot here because we all know how basically impossible it is to get high-end NVIDIA GPUs right now.
Oh, yeah. Total bottleneck.
So instead of fighting that, Deuticular created a silicon edition that actually uses the Apple Mac Mini M4.
Right.
And the reasoning isn't just about availability, it's about heat and power. Because NVIDIA chips are, frankly, power-hungry furnaces.
They really are.
If you are running strictly off a localized solar array, you just cannot afford to waste massive amounts of electricity trying to cool down a graphics card. But Apple's neural engines provide high-level AI processing at a fraction of that thermal cost.
It perfectly illustrates their whole approach to off-grid efficiency.
Mm.
And then for larger deployments, Tier 2 scales up to the pilot standard, which is built into a modified 10-foot shipping container.
Okay, so we're getting bigger.
Much bigger. Because then we reach the absolute top of the pyramid, which is Tier 3, the AI core.
The big one.
Yeah, it's of a massive 20-foot high cube container. It deploys 15 kilowatts of solar wings. It packs a 60 kilowatt hour battery bank. And it actually houses dual Xeon Platinum servers with NVIDIA A100 GPUs.
So they do use NVIDIA when they have the power for it.
Exactly, for when you actually need that really heavy computing power offline.
Yeah.
And it even has this integrated NOVEC 1230 gas system, so it can suppress server fires without destroying all the electronics.
Wow. Okay, but throwing high-end hardware into a shipping container, I mean, that's really only half the battle. What makes these boxes actually resilient is the software running inside them, right?
Right.
They use this thing called the Trinity Stack.
Yeah, the Trinity Stack, it utilizes Proxmox, which is it's essentially virtualization software that allows you to run multiple distinct isolated computer systems on one single physical machine.
Okay.
And they split the machine into the three layers.
Yeah.
So layer one is the gatekeeper running the ifsense to rigorously manage firewalls.
Mm-hmm.
Layer two is the ledger running Ubuntu to handle local data storage and, you know, execute smart contracts.
And then layer three?
Layer three is the auditor running Kali Linux. The auditor is basically an automated hacker that just constantly probes its own internal network.
Looking for vulnerabilities.
Exactly. Finding them and fixing them before an external threat can actually exploit them.
It's just an incredibly paranoid architecture. It's like turning a discarded armored car into a portable AWS server that absolutely refuses to call home.
That's a great way to put it.
But honestly, if Deuticular is relying so heavily on modifying consumer-grade tech, like you mentioned Mac Minis and Raspberry Pis, doesn't that introduce a massive weak point?
How do you mean?
Well, I just feel like a modified Mac Mini doesn't seem as reliable as a custom-built enterprise-grade server from Cisco or IBM, you know?
See, it seems counterintuitive, but using battle-tested commodity hardware is totally intentional.
Really?
Yeah. A consumer chip has been stress-tested by literally millions of daily users. By taking those proven chips, wrapping them in CNC machined aluminum armor, modifying their thermal dynamics with phase change paste, and then putting that hyper paranoid Trinity stack on top of it.
They make it stronger.
They actually remove the single points of failure. The software is written with the expectation that the hardware will face extreme volatile conditions. It's designed to self-heal and route around damage.
Oh, I see.
Contrast that with a delicate enterprise server, right? That's engineered. With the assumption that it will spend its entire life in a perfectly climate-controlled, dust-free room. When things go wrong in the real world, the ruggedized consumer gear often survives way longer.
That makes a lot of sense. But an armored box sitting out in the desert is still just an expensive paperweight without a brain.
Right.
Like, if these machines are completely disconnected from the cloud, so no ChatGPT, no Google, no remote tech support, how are they processing complex, unpredictable tasks? How is this hardware surviving without any human intervention?
Well, this is where we cross into sovereign intelligence. Deuticular utilizes what they call OpenClaw AI agents.
Okay.
Instead of relying on massive trillion parameter models sitting in some American data center, they run highly optimized models like Llama 3AB completely locally within the node itself.
Wow, so it's all in the box.
All in the box. They call this blue collar AI because these aren't just chatbots, you know. They are specialized autonomous workers capable of doing actual real labor.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the sources detail exactly what these digital workers do. Like, take the DevOps Sovereign.
Yeah, that's a great example.
It is effectively a localized system administrator locked inside the box. It reads the raw server logs, and if a localized network drops, it autonomously diagnoses the problem and repairs the connection via SSH without ever needing a human to remote in.
And for physical repairs, they deploy the field medic.
The field medic.
Yeah, which is a vision language model.
Yeah.
So let's say a technician is staring at a busted hydraulic pump on some legacy piece of farming machinery, like 50 miles from the nearest cell tower.
Okay, totally off-grid.
Exactly. They literally just point the node's camera at the broken pump. The AI visually identifies the exact legacy part, cross-references its massive offline database, and spits out a step-by-step repair sequence right there in the dirt.
That is wild. And then there's the industrial foreman. This agent translates your high-level commands into physical actions.
Right.
Because it speaks the language of heavy machinery protocols like CAN bus or RS-485, which are essentially the nervous systems for industrial equipment.
Yeah.
So you tell the node you want to optimize power, and the foreman physically adjusts the solar inverters or mechanical relays. It's basically like having a senior IT admin, a master mechanic, and an industrial foreman locked inside a shipping container, doing their jobs perfectly with zero internet access.
It's amazing. And it also completely revolutionizes data privacy, which is huge.
How so?
Well, they offer an administrative agent called the Sovereign Executive. It handles voice-to-text, document analysis, scheduling, all that stuff. But it relies entirely on a local vector database.
Okay, remind me how that works offline.
A vector database allows the AI to instantly search through unstructured data like your private PDFs, financial records, voice notes, without ever needing to index that data on a cloud server.
Oh, wow.
Because the cord is physically cut, your corporate or personal data is mathematically protected from being harvested to train big tech's models.
It's just the ultimate privacy shield. Imagine having a CRM that never harvests your data. But, you know, that actually exposes a massive contradiction in this entire system, I think.
What do you mean?
Well, if this box is completely cut off, operating in island mode, generating its own data without any central oversight, why should anyone actually trust it?
Ah, the trust issue.
Yeah. If a farm in Nebraska uses the system to claim they grew 10,000 tons of organic wheat and a buyer in London wants to purchase it, how does the buyer verify that data if it never went through a central authority?
What's fascinating here is how D-Reticular resolves that paradox with a split ledger architecture. Because you're right, in the decentralized market, you face a brutal conflict.
Right.
Regulators like the SEC and GDPR demand absolute privacy for financial and identity data. You cannot put someone's bank details or personal identity on a public blockchain.
Obviously not.
However, the global commodities market demands absolute public trust and transparency. So you basically cannot host both on the same database.
So the node literally just splits the event in half the moment it happened.
Precisely. Layer A is called the bank. This is a private, completely encrypted ledger buried deep inside a node. It holds your personal identity, know your customer checks, legal financial contracts. Only authorized regulators and the parties involved can ever access it.
Okay. And layer B?
Layer B is the library. This is a public ledger broadcast onto a decentralized network called Freenet. It stores only the physical attestations, so the verified weight of a crop, the ambient temperature, the GPS coordinates, the timestamp.
Got it.
There is absolutely zero personal data on layer B, only the mathematical proof of a physical event.
Wait, hold on though. Garbage in, garbage out, right?
Usually, yeah.
If I'm a bad actor, like a corrupt farm manager trying to inflate my yield numbers, what's stopping me from just writing a simple script that feeds fake moisture readings or inflated weights into the machine before it ever hits the ledger?
And that is the multi-million dollar question right there.
Yeah.
To prevent software spoofing, D-Reticular relies on a hardware root of trust.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
The RS node acts as a hardware oracle by utilizing a built-in software-defined radio. It performs what they call radio frequency fingerprinting.
Interesting.
This is critical. Every single electronic sensor on the planet has microscopic manufacturing flaws, and those physical imperfections create a completely unique radio frequency signature, an RF hum.
Wait, really? So it's reading the actual microscopic, like atomic structure of the metal inside the sensor?
Exactly. When a sensor connects to the node scans that hum. If the RF signature doesn't perfectly match the known physical profile of the device, the node just blocks the data immediately.
Wow.
You literally cannot trick the system with a malicious software script because the node is validating the physical physics of the hardware itself.
That's incredible.
And once it verifies the hardware is real, a TPM 2.0 security chip, which is a dedicated processor designed specifically to lock down cryptographic keys, it signs the data packet. So you now have mathematically irrefutable proof that a real physical sensor generated that specific data at that specific time.
Which basically mints a trustless commodity. You don't need to trust the farmer. You just trust the math.
Yes. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it creates an enormous safe harbor for corporate liability.
Oh, because the data flow is clean.
Right. because the data flows straight from a physically verified sensor to an immutable public ledger, a company can absolutely prove to regulators that they did not tamper with the data.
Okay, so taking this out of the theoretical, we can look at exactly how this spherical resilience is being deployed into the physical world right now.
Yeah, the real-world applications are wild.
The blueprints detail business plan project sovereign scale, which is the execution plan for a 2,500-unit purchase order targeting four very specific blue ocean markets.
Right, and the first one is the small city nexus, which is aimed at municipal governments.
And their go-to-market strategy here is just brilliant. They use a Trojan horse approach.
Yeah, I love this part.
They don't walk into a rural mayor's office and pitch some radical, decentralized smart city. They walk in and sell this sovereign support desk AI agent to immediately slash the city's IT help desk costs.
Because that's a real immediate pain point.
Right. And then once the hardware is physically in the building and saving money, they map the municipal intranet and slowly replace big tech dependencies with a self-healing local network.
And looking at the municipal blueprints, they're even applying this to local elections.
Oh, the Sovereign Elector Kit.
Yeah, the Sovereign Elector. It's an EAC-compliant voting precinct kit. It basically utilizes the split ledger technology to completely decouple a voter's identity from a cryptographically verified, air-gapped paper audit trail.
So it's a strictly mathematical approach to election security.
Exactly, completely bypassing internet-connected databases. Now, the second target market they outline is precision agriculture.
This is where we see the sovereign agronomist AI. Picture a farming cooperative using this node to automatically mint trustless ESG carbon credits by verifying soil data, you know, completely bypassing the massive data silos of big ag corporations.
Right.
And they pair the node with the Helping Hand, which is this stripped down six-axis industrial robotic arm. The local node just autonomously controls the arm to harvest crops, completely off-grid.
It's basically a robot farmer. Then, moving to the maritime and hospitality sector, they deploy the WISP-in-a-box model.
WISP meaning wireless internet service provider.
Exactly. Imagine a remote eco-resort or marina. The node takes a single Starlink connection, bonds it with local cellular data for redundancy, and then uses an automated captive portal to resell that internet bandwidth to guests or transient boats for like $5 a gigabyte.
So it turns a dormant piece of hardware into a localized profit-generating internet provider.
Exactly. And finally, there's the defense and logistics market. The Tier 1 and 2 units are utilized as civilization in a suitcase for rapid disaster response.
Which is such a cool name.
It really is.
Yeah.
But the standout application here is the Sovereign Forge. This is an aerospace manufacturing hub that uses local thermal cameras to visually monitor 3D printers in real time.
And it does that offline.
Yes. It mints immutable compliance documents for the FAA, proving an airplane part was printed at the correct temperature without ever needing to upload those proprietary 3D blueprints to a vulnerable cloud server.
So what does this all mean? When you look at these four markets together, you realize these aren't just fancy Wi-Fi routers. These are cyber-physical systems actively manipulating the physical world.
Yeah.
They are harvesting crops, manufacturing airplane parts, managing power flows, securing evidence vaults with 3D LiDAR, and doing it all autonomously.
Which brings us to the financial reality of all this. Because changing civilization is a lofty goal, but Dureticular is a venture studio.
Right. This has to actually make economic sense over the next decade.
And the 10-year financial pro forma for Project Sovereign Scale is incredibly revealing. Over just the first 3 years, the projected revenue for these 2,500 units is $12.15 million. But the most interesting part is exactly how that revenue shifts over time. They project a massive inversion of revenue in year three.
An inversion? What does that look like?
Well, in the first year, almost 90% of their income is generated by selling the physical hardware and charging setup fees.
Yeah.
But by year three, the recurring SaaS revenue, so the monthly licensing fees for the OpenClaw AI agents and the automated profit sharing from those WSP networks, it completely overtakes the hardware sales.
Wow. And as that revenue inverts, their profit margins just explode, jumping from a 56% gross margin in year one to a 72% margin by year six.
Exactly.
And the logic there is pretty straightforward. Physical fulfillment is incredibly expensive. Shipping heavy metal boxes and paying technicians eats into profits.
Yeah.
But digital fulfillment, you know, delivering an updated AI smart contract over a network, that has a marginal cost of practically zero.
Exactly. However, there is a very notable line item in these performas. Consulting.
I saw this.
It is a massive driver of revenue. It starts at $3.5 million initially and peaks at $12 million by year 10. They charge these significant fees for what they call topology mapping, which is physically surveying a city to determine the optimal placement of the mesh nodes, and for brainwashing the hardware.
Brainwashing.
Yeah, which involves custom coding, industrial robotic arms for specific factory floors, things like that.
But wait, if the entire philosophical goal of DePIN and DeArticular is decentralization, removing the middlemen, why are they making up to $12 million a year basically playing the middleman? Doesn't charging massive consulting fees just make them the new centralized authority?
It's a fair question, but the documentation addresses this directly. DeArticular's engineers operate as the oracles of the network. They are proving that while the technology itself is decentralized and trustless, deploying it into the messy, unpredictable physical world still requires expert human integration at the onset.
Oh, I get it. You can't just drop an armored container into a wheat field and expect it to automatically run a smart city.
Exactly. You need human architects to bridge the gap between the legacy world and the decentralized future. And there's one more financial lever built into the model.
Mm-hmm.
The year 6 forced refresh cycle.
Because physical hardware degrades over time.
Right.
Even inside an armored container, after 5 or 6 years, processors become outdated and batteries lose their charge. So in year 6, the communities and businesses that bought into the ecosystem in year 1 are basically forced to purchase the next generation of hardware to maintain their local infrastructure.
Yeah, it locks them into a permanent capital expenditure cycle.
Right.
Once you replace your fragile centralized grid with spherical resilience, you are inherently committed to maintaining those spheres.
Well, we have covered an immense amount of ground today. We've gone from the core philosophy of the death of the line all the way through the hardware of island mode, the localized brains of open claw AI, the physical physics of the split ledger solving the privacy paradox, and of course, the real world economics of Project Sovereign Scale.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is. You, the listener, have just had a front row seat to what very well might be the DePIN paradigm shift.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the major takeaway from all of this research is that the machine-to-machine economy is no longer just a theoretical concept.
It's here.
It really is. We are rapidly approaching a reality where machines are fully capable of paying each other, diagnosing their own mechanical failures, and minting trustless commodities entirely in the dark, without any human or cloud oversight.
It is staggering to think about. And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder. We started by imagining a world severed from the centralized grid.
Right.
As this decentralized technology matures and small cities, farms, or local businesses become completely sovereign, generating their own power, their own local internet, their own AI offline, what happens to the geopolitical power of the nation states and the big tech monopolies that currently control those lifelines?
That's the real question.
If a city's entire operational brain can survive off-grid inside a shipping container, who really holds the power? Think about it. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.